Hello, podcast listeners. This is Rob again, and I'd like to ask you for a favor. As I often say, our mission here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by helping companies improve their process safety programs. However, we can only meet our mission by working with more companies, and that's where you come in. If your company needs a PSM audit, or perhaps needs help with a process hazard analysis, or maybe you don't know how to submit an RMP plan to EPA, let us know. These are all things that we can help with. At Amplify Process Safety, we are experts in all aspects of PSM and RMP regulations, including PHAs, mechanical integrity, management of change, and we also have lots of useful knowledge related to NFPA requirements, combustible dust, etc. So if you or someone at your company could use our help or just wants to talk about some things related to process safety, please don't hesitate to reach out. Whenever you want to, you can reach me on my direct line, 207-229-0862. And as I said, if you know of anyone who can use our services, please let us know. Till next time, be safe out there.
Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. This is Rob Bartlett, Principal Consultant at Amplify Process Safety, and in today's episode, we're going to be reviewing the findings of a recent report from the Chemical Safety Board that was released related to the 2019 tank farm fire that happened at the Intercontinental Terminals Company in Deer Park, Texas. And with me today is our own Joe Pastor. Hi, Joe. How about you get us started by describing the incident?
Yes, sure thing. So this incident, as you mentioned, occurred in 2019. So just after 10 a.m. on March 17th of 2019, there was an accidental release of butane-enriched naphtha product that accumulated and then ignited near a really large above-ground atmospheric storage tank known as Tank 80-8. So the CSB did find that a circulation pump connected to that tank failed, which allowed the butane-enriched naphtha product contained in the tank to escape. So this pump continued to operate as the product was being released from the failed pump for about 30 minutes until it found an ignition source causing a fire to erupt and engulf the whole tank 80-8 piping manifold. And then once the fire erupted, ITC was unable to isolate or stop the release. So pretty bad day over there at this tank farm. So as a result, you know, this fire is burning, intensifying, it's spreading to the other 14 tanks in the same containment area. So they're all pretty closely located. And actually the fire burned for 3 days before it was finally extinguished. So
that
really
is crazy.
Long burning.
That is crazy.
Yep. So as you can imagine, lots of property damage at this terminal, including the destruction of those 80,000 barrel above ground atmospheric storage tanks. So really large. And then, of course, their contents were all ignited as well. And as you can guess, also some really significant impacts on the surrounding community.
Yeah, it did. So because of the benzene related air quality concerns, there was a shelter in place order, which was issued for the entire city of Deer Park at one point. And local schools and businesses either closed or operated under modified conditions. They had a portion of a major highway in the area that was closed. Also, the secondary containment walls surrounding the tank farm partially collapsed to add more to the catastrophe here, allowing a mixture of the hydrocarbon products firefighting foam and contaminated water to be released to the surrounding waterways, resulting in the closure of a 7-mile stretch of the Houston Ship Channel, which was adjacent to the Deer Park facility there for ITC, and as well as several waterfront parks in Harris County and the city of LaPorte, all due to the contamination. So that's all from not just the material that was leaked and that was pumped out of the process, but also the firefighting foam, which, as we know now, is not the best stuff to get into our waterways, as well as that contaminated water. Yeah, so it was not one of those we're just going to be impacting the site. It had a significant impact offsite as well.
Right. And like we always say, we invite you to go look at the report for additional details, but we are going to get into some of the key safety issues that the CSB highlighted. They grouped these into 5 main concerns. So first, the pump mechanical integrity. So ITC really didn't have a formal mechanical integrity procedure in order to maintain the integrity of this particular tank and its equipment, including the pump. And so therefore, you know, it wasn't under any sort of like testing or maintenance plan that was robust or, you know, kept track of in the way that we would like to see in something that falls under a mechanical integrity piece of a PSM program. So
absolutely,
it really didn't have this formal program in place. Second concern was dealing with a flammable gas detection system, or in this case, lack thereof. So this tank was not equipped with a flammable gas detection system, meaning that they couldn't be warned as soon as this breach took place. And so that's why it actually, you know, was leaking for 30 minutes before it ignited. And so just not a good situation for an area where you do have the potential to leak flammable gas. They just couldn't be aware of it without a detection system.
Well, and without that detection system, not only were they not aware of it, but they also didn't have interlocks in place based on that, right? So ideally, you would have some sort of flammable gas detection. And then if it detected flammables, you're going to shut off that pump. You're going to, you know, remove any potential ignition sources, et cetera. So yeah, that's a big one.
Yes, yes. And then kind of related to that, remotely operated emergency isolation valves were also not something that this tank was equipped with, meaning, you know, they couldn't turn it off from a safe location, which was a really big deal, especially because of how close it was to some other tanks in this containment area. They couldn't really isolate anything from a distance. They really needed to be up close and personal to turn valves and things like that, which you really can't do.
You can't do that in an emergency like that.
Fire. No. Yeah. No. So definitely, you know, something that would have been important to think about in the design. Additionally, when we talk about design features, another concern that the CSB had was just the design of the tank farm itself. So things like the tank spacing, subdivisions, engineering controls for pumps inside the containment area, and then drainage systems. Some of these items really just allowed the fire to spread more than it would have if there were kind of appropriate measures in place from a design standpoint. Mm-hmm. So very unfortunate for the design of this particular tank farm. And then finally, a concern that the CSB identified deals with PSM and RMP applicability. Mm. So because this particular tank did not fall under OSHA PSM's requirements or EPA's RMP requirements due to exemptions for atmospheric tanks, they just didn't really have to have a formal process safety program. And so a lot of the programs in place that help you manage your risk and, you know, identify how you can prevent catastrophic events from happening through things like mechanical integrity and some of these safeguards that we mentioned, there's just not really in place if you don't take the time to have a formal process safety program. And unfortunately, that just wasn't the case here because legally they weren't required to comply with those regulations.
We're going to get to that in a couple of minutes, but that's the case, right? Is that the risk management program doesn't require many flammable liquids. It does include some flammable liquids and gases, but if you're not specifically listed, then it doesn't apply. And of course, currently the PSM regulations have an exemption for atmospheric storage tanks of flammables. So you don't even need to include those in your PSM program, or you don't have to include those in determining whether or not you need to follow and therefore have a PSM program. So,
Right. And it is interesting because we've seen in the last couple of years, just in the Houston area alone, a few events dealing with tank farms. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the CSB recommendations. Yeah. So in this case, they did make recommendations to OSHA, the EPA, and a standard setting organization. So let's get into those. What did they recommend, Rob?
So before I get into the recommendations, it's interesting to note that there were three items that were previously recommended but not implemented. And this is something that is an issue with the way that the U.S., the way that we manage these investigations. You know, the CSB has the power to investigate and develop reports and all that, but they don't have any sort of power to actually make another agency do anything. And in this case, there were two recommendations that were made to OSHA previously and one that was made to EPA previously that have not yet been addressed. And in this case, the report specifically said that those old recommendations are superseded by the recommendations in this report. So I think it'll be real interesting to see if OSHA and EPA act on these recommendations as they're looking to make changes to those requirements here in probably the near future. So moving on to those recommendations. So as they normally do, they broke the recommendations up a little bit. For the company, they recommended implementing a PSM system for all their tank farm equipment, including following API standard 2610. They recommended implementing condition monitoring, including for vibrations on all pumps used for highly hazardous chemicals. So there was some indication that the actual failure was caused by vibrations. And so having vibration monitoring on the pumps would have helped to identify that there was an issue before it turned catastrophic. The next one is pretty much a no-brainer: install flammable gas monitoring. Also develop a response plan and train personnel on the alarm response, right? So put in gas monitor LELs or other sorts of gas monitoring, make sure you have a plan. What are we going to do when those go off? And then make sure you train your folks when that alarm goes off, this is what you do. That may be to do something to prevent the incident from progressing, or it may be get out of Dodge, you know, run away and get to a safe location. But you want to have some sort of, you know, you need some gas monitoring and you need to have a plan of what to do. And although it wasn't listed there, we would obviously, as part of our PHA process, be talking about having some interlocks that would say when that LEL went off, shut off that pump or close the valves, whatever you should do. The next one is install remotely operated fail-safe emergency shutoff valves for anything that has an NFPA rating of a 3 or higher. So if you can't get to equipment to shut it off in an emergency, that's going to be a problem. So if you had those remote shutoffs, then that would have been a good thing to use in combination with our gas monitoring so that we can make sure that we can stop the flow of materials. And then the last thing was evaluate all new and existing atmospheric storage tanks against that API standard that we mentioned before, 2610, as well as NFPA 30 for flammable liquids. And so they would like for the company to make sure that all new and obviously the existing storage tanks comply with those standards. What did they recommend to the other organizations, Joe?
So the five that you mentioned, of course, were for ITC specifically. And then the CSB recommended to API, so the American Petroleum Institute, that they update that standard 2610 to include requiring flammable gas detection systems because it currently does not include that requirement. And then the last two really big recommendations that the CSB had have major implications in the chemical industry. And these were that the CSB recommended that OSHA eliminate the flammable storage exemption in the PSM standard and that the EPA include flammable liquids in its RMP program. So basically asking them to change the definition of what is required to fall under PSM and RMP. So pretty big deal there, especially if OSHA and EPA end up adopting and listening to these recommendations.
Yeah, those are huge. You know, the flammable storage exemption for atmospheric storage tanks from the PSM program, you know, we see a lot of facilities where they don't have to follow PSM. They've got a 500,000 gallon storage tank of methanol or cyclohexane or something, but their process is less than 10,000 pounds. So therefore they don't fall under PSM. And same thing on the EPA side, there is no general flammable liquids requirement. It's only if you have a flammable material, which happens to be listed in the list of chemicals. So this would have a significant impact. I think that one of the issues that we see in our work is that folks use the exemption and then don't do anything out the tank farm. And if you look at the exemption, what the exemption is saying is that you don't have to count the inventory in the tank versus the 10,000 pound threshold for PSM. And people think that that means, okay, my storage tanks are exempt, but that's not actually true, because if you do have a process which has more than 10,000 pounds, not counting those storage tanks, you're still interconnected and potentially co-located, depending on what your process looks like, potentially co-located with those storage tanks. So therefore, they still would be part of your PSM process. And we see a lot of folks out there that are not doing that properly because they assume the storage tank exemption means they don't have to follow PSM for those storage tanks. And that's really not what the exemption is. But that's a side thing. You know, the fact is that if OSHA and EPA implement those recommendations, it will have a significant impact on the industry. And that brings us to the key lessons for industry. So this is for everybody else out there who may be handling flammables, and especially for those who are storing or have storage tanks with large volumes of flammable materials. So there were five of these key lessons. And the first one has to do with the fact that when we do hazard and risk assessments in industry, we usually consider single failures at a time. And CSB's point after having looked at this is that we have major incidents that happen when multiple failures occur. So to prevent those from happening, we should be making sure that we have multiple layers of protection in place. And so therefore, one of the key lessons here was when determining when, how, or whether to complete the recommendations from hazard assessments, companies should ensure the appropriate number of preventive and mitigative safeguards are in place such that a single failure of a preventive or mitigative safeguard will not result in a catastrophic event. That is so important. As an industry, as we have evolved the way that we do PHAs, we've moved more toward considering this whole layers of protection analysis, or LOPA, as a way to make sure that if we have an incident that is a high enough risk and could have a catastrophic consequence, we want to make sure that we have multiple levels of safeguards that are protecting us. We don't want to be relying on just one layer of protection. There's another part of this key lesson, which is that if we have hazards that are identified by our PHA team, and it's going to take time to implement those recommendations, especially if it's going to be a large capital project, it might take a year or two to get budget and design and all that stuff, we still should put some sort of controls in place for those things that are not yet installed. So that was key lesson number one. Number two has to do with flammable gas detection. If you've got terminals, storage tanks that have large volumes of flammable liquids, you should be using flammable gas detectors. We've talked about that. I won't go into any further with that. Same thing related to remote isolation. If you have large inventories of materials that if you couldn't turn off a pump or close a valve could result in a release of hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands, certainly of gallons or pounds or whatever of material, you need to have some sort of remote isolation device. So that was number three. The fourth one has to do with NFPA 30. And kind of the minimum expectation is that we should be, when we're designing and operating storage tanks and having spacing requirements for how far storage tanks need to be away from each other, et cetera, we should be using NFPA 30. CSB's point, while NFPA 30 defines the minimum requirements for these tank farms, there's other industry guidance documents that can and should be used to really manage that risk. And the ones that they specifically kind of throw out there are FM Global's loss prevention data sheet, FMLPDS, it's number 7-88, which is the outdoor ignitable liquid storage tanks. They also pull in APIRP 2021, which is the management of atmospheric tank fires. And then that API STD 2610, which is the design, construction, operation, maintenance, and inspection of terminals and tank facilities. Boy, some of these titles get long.
That's a mouthful.
It is. Anyway, so the whole idea is that we need to have more robust tank farm design. As you said, Joe, right? I mean, there have been a number of significant tank farm fires just in the greater Houston area, mm-hmm. let alone in other places around the U.S. And so obviously we need to do some things. And those standards that they list that I just stumbled through are definitely ones that you can use as guidance for that. So that was number four. And number five really gets down to this whole issue of, is it a PSM process? Is it an RMP process? Well, if it's not, I don't need to do anything, blah, blah, blah. Really, they are recommending that even if we don't need to comply with PSM or RMP, a company such as the one involved with this incident here, if we're handling significant amounts of flammables, even if PSM and RMP don't apply, we should consider applying a comprehensive process safety management system. And that's with small letters for process safety management. So basically have some system in place to manage your process safety. And they mention a couple. CCPS, the Center for Chemical Process Safety, has a couple of guidelines for risk-based process safety, as well as guidelines for implementing process safety management systems. So those are two very good resources for what are the steps to implement something like this. And then the one thing that we want to throw in that wasn't really brought up in the CSB report, but we've got podcasts about it. We run into it fairly frequently here at Amplify, is EPA's general duty clause, which is part of the risk management program regulations. And what it basically says is if you have hazardous chemicals, you need to manage them in a way that prevents catastrophic incidents. And there's guidelines for what that includes. And a lot of it looks kind of like a light version of PSM. So regardless, companies have, as the report says, have a duty of care to ensure safety at facilities that handle flammable or highly hazardous substances and protect surrounding communities and the environment, regardless of whether PSM or RMP apply. So we highly recommend that. Every week I'm having a conversation with either an existing client or a potential client about the fact that, yes, this process may not need to comply with PSM because of thresholds, et cetera, but you still have a reason, you still have a requirement to comply with PSM. Yes, so that's
a really common theme that we're seeing in these final investigation reports, is a lot of these facilities are not covered under PSM or RMP. And yep. This is something Molly and I have been discussing in the more recent episodes we've done as well. So this is definitely a really good key lesson for industry, is just because you've already determined that you don't have to fall under those doesn't mean you should say, oh, well, we don't have to have any sort of process safety systems at all. It's definitely worth looking at.
You're just taking a significant risk there. And unfortunately, it's a risk that can seriously impact the folks at your site, as well as we saw here, have offset consequences as well. So
definitely.
I think that wraps it up, Joe. I think that's another CSB report in the can.
Yes. So if you have a comment about this week's episode, an idea for a future episode, or a question about anything process safety related, we'd love to hear from you. So please send us a voice message. You can use the link in our episode description, or you can just send us an email to podcast@amplifyconsultants.com.
And finally, and I say this at the end of every podcast, our goal here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems, because we believe that these systems will help prevent catastrophic incidents like fires, explosions, and toxic releases, kind of like we just talked about in this podcast from this CSB report. So if there's anything that we can do to help you on your process safety journey, please do not hesitate to reach out to us, and we will certainly like to talk to you about how we can help.
Yes. So to all of you in the audience, thank you so much for listening. And until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.